Okay, so we will continue. Please, oh, first, before I forget, I make you pass the attendance sheet, so if you can sign closely on your name. And you make it pass in the room. So just before we talk about collaboration in mixed reality, and we see like a general introduction where we saw that we had two kinds of collaboration, so remote collaboration and co-located collaboration. So right now we will dig more into the awareness and communication, so more on the social aspect that appear between people when they collaborate, and we'll see that this happened more on the remote collaboration. And what we can achieve in remote collaboration to improve awareness and communication between users. So I will show you. I show you already this example, but I will come back on it, and I will show you two other examples of different applications that are doing remote collaboration in virtual reality. And we'll focus on the social presence and see that there is different way to represent user and achieve this social presence. So I make the video play again, but you saw so we saw these two people that interact together on scientific data. And if we check, we see that there is some very, very simple representation of the user here. Oops. I don't know why it stops. So here, to represent the user, there is only, we'll see. There is only one kind of viewing frustrum that represents the point of view of the remote part. We will see a view of one person, so it will be easy to understand. But there is just this viewing frustrum that represents the head position and head orientation of the remote person, and two cubes that represent the hand. So we see that's a very, very simplified setup, and very simplified, that use very simplified avatar. I don't know why it's pausing. First try. So here we see, so we'll see the remote person here. We see so the viewing frustum that show his head position, and the two green cubes that show his hand representation. And I show you this example because this one is, we see that that's not the best way to represent users. That's a very, very simplified way. But because the two users has to collaborate together during this experiment, the participant of the experiment really report the fact that they have the feeling to achieve a task with a real other person, even if they can only see this pyramid and these two cubes for representing the hand. So it was funny to see that even with a very, very simple version of the avatar, the feeling of being socially present with another person, so being together to achieve a task, was quite strong. I show you a second video. It would have been better for this one. This one. Yeah, that's fine. So it's a demo from Facebook where they demonstrate their new kind of social. I think that's 3 years ago. They demonstrate a new kind of like social network. But what is interesting is more the way they represent a user. So I think they track the hand of the user to animate the top of the body. I don't think they have legs on the video, but because yeah, they are not tracking the feet, but they are tracking the hand, and with that they reconstruct the arm position. And I think they also do some facial expression recognition, and they transmit to the avatar the animation. And And that's it. So we see that it's still a simplified version of the avatar, but it's a bit improved with some gestures, some facial animation. And
how do they track the facial?
I'm not sure to know here. It depends. There is several ways to do that. Even with a simple Kinect, I will show you an example after. The Kinect from Microsoft, you can track with a video. You do some video analysis, and you can detect some features. And then map that to the avatar. I will show you an example just after. So I think I will speed up a bit. I just wanted to show something interesting at the end. So they can do check 360 video together. It's not the most interesting. I think they can do some interaction. This guy can draw his own sword to fight with. Nothing very, very new here. And then the last thing I wanted to show you. Here. You see, it's quite interesting. They also have integrating video communication inside the. Oh, it's not the one I wanted to show you. You can. They can check video together. I think this is. Maybe it's live video. I don't know. So they can also do video communication, so I think he will take the view from, we have the point of view of Mark Zuckerberg, and we go inside his home, and I thought it was a live video, but it doesn't, it looked like the dog is very static for live video. This is the interesting thing I wanted to show you. So he has video communication with his wife, and that's very interesting to be able to integrate video inside the virtual environment. So it comes back a bit to this augmented virtuality, what I talked before, but it also integrates video. So we have animated avatar, we have collaborative interaction, but here we include also video facilities. To be able, so the idea is that we can mix both. We can sometimes use avatar, but from some other stuff, I think talking with an avatar like that, it could be also a bit awkward. So it could be interesting also in some case to use a video to represent user, and that's it. I think they have a virtual selfie stick to take selfies. And the last one that I want to show you, it's another application where they did some 3D reconstruction of the user, and they create a 3D model of the user, and they put that in the virtual environment to represent the user. So we have three guys so in the same virtual reality system, and they will do some collaboration with two other remote persons, and you see that you had a 3D reconstruction of these two persons. And then you can create a kind of 3D model, but that look not really real because the quality is not very good right now. But that feel like you have the real person in front of you. And then they have some nice also 3D interaction. So they use here a world in miniature to see where they are inside a big city. And they can also use this world in miniature to move inside the city and to travel. I will maybe not let all the video, but so they can zoom in the world in miniature and see each other inside the world in miniature. So we see the four people are represented with a 3D reconstruction of their body. And then they can travel together in the city. We can shake stuff together. They can navigate together. So they have a way to move together with. So here they really are doing collaborative navigation because they move, like, I think one is driving and the other one are following. And with some examples also, collaborative navigation. I think at the end they use the world in miniature to navigate. So you will see that they will pick the. They will select the other user and they will move them around in the virtual environment. And you will see that they will disappear when they move them. And I think they can even move themselves through the world in miniature. So they will do the same, they will pick themselves and move themselves to another position. So I think I stopped that. So what I wanted to show here is that there is really several ways to represent the user, and it depends, of course, of what you want to achieve. And something that is very important in this kind of collaborative application is, of course, the awareness of the other person. And when we are talking about awareness, it's the way of perceiving the other user. So, of course, we need first to perceive where they are inside the virtual environment, if we want to work with them or join them. But it's not enough. We need to know where they are, but we also know what they are doing. What they are looking at, are they looking at me, or this kind of thing. If I want to show them something, I need to check, as in the virtual world, that the person is listening and looking at me. And it could be quite complex according to the representation that you use. You also, in addition to what they are doing, you may also want to know what they could do. Can they see me? Can they see what I'm showing to them? Could they do what I asking them to do? So if I want them to perform a task in the virtual environment, if they cannot do it because they are too far or it could be complicated, so I really need to understand what they are doing. And in that case, you really need to improve the mutual understanding between the person if you have a good awareness. If you say it's just next to me, but the person cannot see where you are, it's an issue. If you say it's just in front of me, but the person cannot see where you are looking at, it's also an issue. So it can create a lot of trouble for communicating if you have a bad awareness. And of course, the awareness, as we say that we are immersed in the virtual environment with multi-sensorial restitution, the awareness of the user is also multi-sensorial. So of course, we will have a visual awareness of the user, we will see them, but we can also have audio awareness or haptic awareness. We can feel the force applied from the user in the virtual environment. So I will give you some examples of these three levels of awareness. So for the visual awareness, we can have several levels of awareness. And here I put a continuum here where you have from very simplified avatar to very realistic. And we could have even have real representation, because in collocated setting, for example, you see the real person. But very simplified is, for example, here, I show you this example with very, very simple head representation and the two hands represented by a cube. And you can have a wide range of representation. You can have here. This one is quite interesting because you have a kind of T-shape with two eyes that represent the user. But on the wall behind them, you have the real video of the person, so which is interesting because you have a mix between real and virtual representation. You can have a very simplified representation. You can have avatar with or without animation. We see that later. And you can have some 3D reconstruction. So here, maybe you did not recognize me, but it's a 3D reconstruction of my head with a Kinect, actually with just a simple Kinect. And it gives quite not very high resolution and very, but a very kind of 3D reconstruction of my head. Yes?
So what's your opinion about social presence and virtual reality? Because my impression was that the more you try to take a realistic image, like we see it here on the very far right,
yeah,
so your virtual reality and the movements are kind of unnatural. So I think there's a term for this effect, that it gets like very creepy if you see something looks human and doesn't behave human.
Yeah, it's called the uncanny valley. And I think the uncanny valley is, I really trust in this uncanny valley. So I will come back on that, but first I explain what is the uncanny valley. So the uncanny valley is, let me think. I think you have in axis how close to a real human it looks. So here you have, here you have the real human. And you start from, it doesn't represent at all to the human. And on the other axis, you have the trust that you put in the other person. You have the trust. And I think the curve goes like that, and you have something like that at the end. You can look for uncanny valley, I think. So at the beginning, if it's not human at all, you don't trust it, which makes sense. But then, more it becomes human, more you start to trust to it. And as you say, when you reach a certain point, it looks almost human, but you can still feel like there is something slightly weird. And then it breaks everything. I have a funny example about that. I will talk about it later. It breaks everything. And of course, when it's human at the end, the trust come back. But you are really this, what it's called uncanny valley here, where it breaks the trust. So yeah, to come back on your question, I think it really depends on the application and what you want to achieve. That's why sometimes very simplified avatar are good enough, and that's good. Sometimes you also, but the thing you are losing also a lot of, we are talking about non-verbal cues. It's all the facial expressions, and it's also sometimes missing. So to me, I think like this kind of 3D reconstruction are funny, of course, but I think, you can really get the uncanny valley and it's an issue. So to me, in this kind of case, sometimes it's just simple to use the real video of the person, because in that case, you don't have this artifact of uncanny valley. But of course, you don't have the 3D reconstruction, so it's always a mix.
So the Facebook avatars we saw, they would aim like probably at the tip, right before the tip to...
Yeah, no, they are even here, because you can really feel that they are not real. So I think the Facebook avatar are still okay, because you can't know that it's not a real representation of the human. It's more when you get very close, like mine is a bit creepy, it's maybe more like that, and it depends. And I have a funny example where I did my postdoc. The head of the lab was a bit crazy, and she wanted to have a robot that looked like her to do telepresence. You know, there is maybe you saw this guy, it's a Japanese guy that creates a robot that looks exactly like him, and he sends him in conferences, and the robot do the talk for him. Oh. And and it worked quite well. But so the head of the lab wanted to have, no, at the beginning she wanted to have a telepresence robot that looked like Marilyn Monroe. And at the end, it didn't work because there is some copyright issue and, you know, like legacy issue. So she was not able to create the copy of Marilyn Monroe. So she said, okay, well, but create a robot exactly like me. But the Japanese company that creates the robot already started to work on the robot and create the hand of the robot. And when they decide to move to the representation of the head of the lab, she was much more smaller than Marilyn Monroe, but they already has done the hand. So they create the robot, they fit it to the size of the head of the lab, but the hand still stays as the one from that was supposed to be for Marilyn Monroe and was slightly bigger. But I think it was very, very tiny. But the robot was looking so creepy because he had, you can guess that he has bigger hands. And I think we are really in this uncanny valley where you notice that, you don't know why, but you notice that something is wrong. And it was exactly the case. So I think it breaks everything. And yeah, I think PhD students get scared to stay in the lab in the night because of the robot after that. But yeah, so you have the hand, but of course, even the eyes, you can see that it's not real eyes of human, and it starts to feel a bit creepy. So yeah, in that case, to me, sometimes video is good because then you can really see the person and you know that this is a real person, and that's less creepy. So yeah, of course you have this range, you have to choose what is best for your application. You have also the issue of the animation, so because you have the avatar, and then you have to animate the avatar. And you can also here have a very simplified animation. We saw it on the Facebook thing. I will show an example that you can achieve with a Kinect. But you can also have some very complex animation. So in some case, you can ask people to wear a suit like that track all their movement and mimic that to the avatar. You can also do facial tracking by putting markers in the face and create like an avatar that react exactly in the same way than the person. So just to give you an example from Avatar Kinect. So I think we'll see in the video. Yeah. So it's just using RGB camera and a depth camera to track the user face. So you see he's putting a mask on the user face to track the facial expression and mimic that on the avatar next to it. And you see, like, Kinect is a very cheap device. It's costing, I don't know now, but it's like €100 or €200. And it's doing a pretty precise result. So you can do some interesting stuff. Of course, as you say, it's you have to be cautious, not fall into this uncanny valley. So yeah, we talk about it. So we can have also very various range of avatar, even for telepresence. Now, if we switch to audio awareness, you can, yeah.
Yeah, what's still the limitation? Because you say you prefer video, and it's probably right, but I thought about it, and the limitation of video would be if I would have an avatar in the virtual environment.
Yeah.
And I would say, okay, I want to represent this head with a video, but if this person is in virtual reality with the
headset, it's an issue, I agree. Yeah.
It doesn't really work anymore, because if I film
yeah.
his head, he has a big...
I think there is still a lot of question, research question about that, how you can deal with virtual reality headset. There is some work that try to recreate the face. If you have this kind of 3D reconstruction that we saw with the person, but still you have the glasses or the virtual reality headset, so it's an issue. So there is some work that can recreate the face, but it's an avatar. It's not a video anymore. It's an avatar. And even if you have the headset, you recreate a 3D model with the proper face. But still, it's probably not perfect. So I think there is a lot of still research question on that. So it's really an open question. So now it was the visual awareness of the person. But you can also have audio awareness. So of course, you can have a voice restitution of your remote partner. But it's even better if you can have specialized voice restitution, if you can hear the sound coming from the proper 3D position it's very important because then you can really locate where the other one is and also what he's doing just by hearing his sound. When we think about audio awareness, of course, we usually think about voice, but it's not only a voice. It's also all the remote users' small noise that you can hear that will give you a lot of information about where they are, what they are doing. So for example, a very good example is the footstep. If you add the footstep of the remote person, it's very efficient to tell you what he's doing and where he is first, because you hear the footstep behind you, or on the left, or on the right. But also, you can hear can understand by the footstep what he's doing. See, if you hear a lot of footstep, you know that he is very active. If you hear nothing, you know that he's quiet and, I don't know, working on something. And it's a very efficient way to transmit some information very easily to the user. And you can even add some sound that describe action. When you are in a virtual environment, when you select object, you could have a sound that say object selected. You know, you can have some sound like beep, like describe action. And it's also a very efficient way to understand what the other are doing. Because if you hear nothing, you know that he's doing nothing. But if you hear a lot of small beep, you know that he's really selecting a lot of object or doing a lot of action. And of course, it's even better if you can have a specialized sound, because you know where the sound is coming from. So I don't know if you heard about specialized sound, but you have several ways to do specialized sound. So it could be binaural restitution if you hear headphones. But also in some setups, you can have some real restitution of the sound. So you have some setups that have some arrows of speakers all around the room and can recreate the sound field of the full room, and then you can really hear the sound from a different location. I can put some light. Oops. So this is all for audio awareness. I don't want to go too much into detail about audio awareness. Now, haptic awareness. So the haptic awareness, as I told before, is try to have a force feedback of the other. And you have two categories of force feedback in that case. You can have some direct force feedback. So you want to touch the other through haptic device. So there is, it will maybe sound a bit creepy to you, but there is a lot of people that work on this kind of thing. In particular, the virtual handshake. I don't know if you are probably using Skype time to time. It's always a bit weird to say hi, bye. And there is some people that try to find solution to have a really like new convention to say bye and, or hi when you are initiate a video communication. So some people, like those two, are working on how you can create a virtual handshake where you can feel the force of the remote person and have really the feeling to and be more engaged, of course, after that in the collaboration with the person. There is a bunch of also people that work on haptic feedback for what you call affective haptic. So affective haptic is really, for example, for partners or lovers, they want to feel each other. I know it sounds a bit creepy, but it exists. I saw some stuff like, for example, this is a belt that you wear here. And for example, your partner can squeeze a pillow, and here you feel the pressure. And it exists. I don't know if you want to. I also saw some in some conference, some people wearing some, they wear some jacket. And the jacket has some, some air pillow inside and can inflate. And it was the same thing. Someone can squeeze a pillow and the partner can feel the force or the pressure on it. So in that case, it can be asymmetrical, like this idea of the one is squeezing and the other one is receiving the feedback. So I think direct force feedback is, I would say, not the most interesting because it's very marginal for handshake, for affective haptic. The most interesting one is indirect force feedback, because as soon as you want to manipulate or move object with a partner in virtual reality, it's very important to feel the force that is applying on the object. So if example, if we want to, we saw the example where they are manipulating the front glass of the car together. So if I'm pulling in one direction and the other is pulling on the other direction, we have an issue. So it's very important to be able to feel the force and feel what the other is doing. So in that case, haptic could be very, very useful. So in that case, you can, for example, with an haptic arm, grab the object, and then you will feel the force that the other is applying on the object. So that's it for awareness, but not totally, but so for the three kinds, that's it for the three kinds of awareness, so visual awareness, audio awareness, and haptic awareness. And I just want to mention the work from Benford that tried to model this spatial awareness. So the idea here was to have it's called spatial model of interaction. And the idea was to have a model which can help both the computer to understand when the user will interact together, but also to measure the awareness between two users, to know if they can communicate by voice, if they can by sound, if they can see each other, and this kind of thing. And that's why Benford defined something called medium. So a medium is a typical communication medium. So it could be the audio channel, the visual channel, the haptic channel, and so on. And for each medium, you will have what he called a focus and a nimbus. So the focus and nimbus have a subspace that bounding the presence of a user for this particular medium. So I will show you an example just after. So the idea of this focus and nimbus, so here you have it was quite old, so you have a very old representation, but the idea was to have some representation that represent all the area where a user, for example, will hear a sound, and on the other one you have all the area where the other will emit a sound, and in that case, if there is a collision between these two areas, you can know that they will be able to hear each other. So it's very convenient first on the technical side, because you know that you need to transmit sound information between these two users. And it's also important to measure awareness between these two users. So the focus and nimbus, I give you an example. Here you have an example for the vision. So the focus is the area where a user perceives the other. So for example, here, if I'm here, I can see only in front of me. And the nimbus is the reverse, is the area where the other can perceive a particular user. So even if they are on my back, I cannot see them, but they can see me. So that's why, for example, for the vision, the nimbus is all around the user. You can be seen by any direction, but of course you can see only in front of you. That's why they are not always exactly similar. The nimbus and focus are not always similar. So I stop that for this awareness model. Just the last thing about perception of the user. So we see that you want to perceive the remote person, but you also want to perceive what he is doing and what he can do. So the activity and the capability of the other user. And there is two questions: how you can understand what the other are doing, and how you can understand what the other can do. And especially important in this case of a setup where you have several users that use a different device. So I saw at the beginning, for example, this one is just using a simple desktop computer. So he will have a very quite limited field of view. He will maybe don't have a depth perception. He will have a very simple interaction and this kind of thing. But maybe this one use an HMD here. So he will have a 360 field of view. He can look in any direction. He can have some very very nice interaction capability thanks to the controller that he is wearing. And all of them could have very, very different interaction capabilities and visualization capabilities. And it's very important to take that into account in the collaboration. So to represent that, we can talk about interaction workspace. So the idea of the interaction workspace is to have some 3D space in the real world that usually are associated to some particular material devices and that enable user to perceive or interact with the virtual world. So for example, for the visual, the interaction workspace is the screen, or the screen that makes possible to see inside the virtual environment. For haptic, for example, it would be the haptic range of the haptic device. I will show you example just after. And the question is why integrating this interaction workspace in the virtual environment? There is two interests. So each user can have a different interaction workspace, so we need to represent them. And it's also very important to take into account the workspace for user interaction, so you can adapt to interaction technique and understand the capabilities. So an example here is an example for a user's physical displacement workspace. So for example, so we talked before about a virtual navigation where you can move inside the virtual environment, but you can also sometimes just walk inside your device. So if you are using a cave system with screen around you, you can walk inside this area. And sometimes it's interesting to represent this in the virtual environment. So both, we'll see example, to enable the user to understand where he can walk and to make the other also understand where he can go. So here you have an example here in a modeling tool. You have this, it's very simple here, just this red circle that represents the tracking area of the body tracking system that the person is using. And here you have this technique is quite interesting. It's a what they call magic barrier tape. So you have on the screen, to avoid collision with the screen, a kind of magic barrier tape. So as soon as you get close to the screen, it displays this magic barrier tape on the screen to avoid you to collide with the screen. But when you reach the magic barrier tape, you can also push on the barrier tape, and it enables you to create some virtual navigation in the virtual environment to move further. You have here an example for haptic interaction. So you know that haptic arms have some limited interaction range. And here, you can display here the haptic range of the interaction. So this is good for making possible to represent capabilities of the user. For example, for the user himself. So this is the example I talk about here. When you get close to the screen, it displays the limit of your user displacement movement to show you that you cannot go further. And in the case of the collaboration, you can also, for example, here they put light to highlight all the space that can be reachable by the user. So the interaction space where the user can grab object. So here we have the view of the user. So we see here he cannot grab this object. Here this object is probably at the border, and here it receives the light from the user. So it means that the user can grab the object. And if we see it from another point of view, as we are another user, so here we have the point of view of the yellow user, and here we have the point of view of another user that look at him. And here I can see that he is not able to grab the cube because it's out of reach for him. Here we see that it's at the edge, and here we see that here now he can grab it. So now if I want him to grab the object, in that case, I can tell him, okay, can you grab the object? It's close to you, and so on. So I think just it's important in some case, of course not in all the case, but sometimes to represent what are the capability of the user. And finally, for this, you can also sometimes want to perceive what are the activities of the user. So what is the user seeing? So some people, for example here, have proposed to display the field of view of the user. So here you have in white the front field of view, and in blue the lateral field of view. Just to try to help people to understand what the user is looking at. And the second thing here is to understand what the user is doing. as I explained during the interaction technique, I say that one advantage of virtual reality is that you can manipulate objects at a distance. But then if everybody starts to manipulate all the objects at the distance, it starts to be very complicated because you see all the objects moving in all the direction and you don't really understand who is doing what and who is manipulating an object. You see just the object moving alone and you don't know who is manipulating the object. So these two work has proposed some solutions. So here they have they represent a kind of extending arm that move close to the object and show that this user is moving this object. And here they simply use a kind of virtual ray that and also with a color the color feedback on the object that shows that here the red user is manipulating this object. So I stop here for awareness. I will quickly talk about communication, so how people can communicate. And of course, we say that there is voice communication, usually between people in two virtual environments. And of course, voice communication is essential for any collaborative application. There is some work that shows that voice communication can compensate bad perception of the virtual environment. It's very good for share different point of view. But the issue, and I like this figure, is that like here you have one user and you have the circle that what the user reveal and the circle that what the user is listening. And you see that sometimes the understanding zone is not that big between the two users. And it can, of course, create issues. So this is one issue. Voice only sometimes is not sufficient to have a good communication. And the other issue is that some work has shown that voice communication also induce discontinuity during the interaction. It's sometimes very hard for people to achieve a task together and to talk at the same time. Especially in virtual reality or augmented reality, where people are a bit are not very familiar with this kind of environment, and it's already sometimes increase a lot the cognitive load of the user because they have to understand the virtual environment, they have to understand a lot of things, and then talking is really sometimes an overload. So when they need to talk, very often they stop what they are doing, they talk. And they do the task again. And some work has shown that it was it could be an issue. So voice communication is good, but we cannot rely only on voice communication. So that's why we need also some specific tool for communication. So I will show you in the next slide a few examples of tools for communication. But we will see that they are very basic right now. There is not a lot of tools that enhance the communication between several users in virtual environment. So one very simple example, but that can be very efficient for collaboration is having a virtual ray. So you see that this user have a virtual ray to point at some scientific data here. And so it's using the laser pointer metaphor as I'm doing here. I show you some stuff with my laser pointer. So they can do exactly the same in virtual reality. So it's very easy and intuitive to manipulate. So it could be a good tool in some case. Of course, people can also put some annotation in the virtual reality. We see some example in the augmented reality video at the beginning, where we had the yellow machine and the guy was putting arrows and not on it. You can have very different kind of annotation. So you have kind of sketch information, as here. You sketch, I don't know, a curve on some scientific data. You can have text annotation, audio annotation, even maybe video annotation. It's especially relevant in the case of scientific data analysis. For example, you can put stuff here. It was also relevant in this case of this yellow machine where you need to describe how to tune it or to manipulate it. And the interesting thing about annotation, it's allow both what we call synchronous and asynchronous collaboration. So synchronous collaboration is what we talk about from the beginning. So two people are working at the same time on some data. So they can put annotation. So look at this, look at this. But it's also interesting for asynchronous collaboration. Asynchronous collaboration is when two people collaborate but at different time. So for example, one user can analyze the data, put some annotation, and another user can come back 3 days later and check the annotation. So it's still a kind of collaboration, but they are not doing it at the same time. That's why we call it asynchronous collaboration. And there is still one last thing about tools for communication that is called PhotoPortal. And this one is, I think, more recent, and it's the first try to create some tool for communication. But we saw that the two previous ones, so the virtual array and the annotation, are very basic way for communicating. So you will see that PhotoPortal is a bit more elaborated. So it enables people to share both 2D and 3D views of the virtual environment. It makes possible to add annotation also, and to interact with some shared views. So I will show you the video. I'll comment it in the meantime. This is done in the context of a castle exploration. So they want to visit together a castle. So they have this kind of what they call photo portal that helps them to take pictures of the virtual environment and to travel thanks to this portal, what we call portal, so this view. So we take some views of the virtual environment and store them and use that for both for navigation and also for collaboration. We'll see some examples of collaboration. So now he has 2D views, then he can switch to a 3D view mode where he can see it in 3D. And they can use it. There is also a functionality where you can cut the 3D model to be able to see inside. I think they they use it also to navigate and say to go inside this room. They will use it, I think, to hang the, I don't know the name of the thing, but the thing that has candle on the rooftop. They will help. They use it to copy object. And they use it also for collaboration. They will take picture of them. That's not the most interesting, maybe. But, they can share this view with the other. The other can use it for traveling, I think. Yeah, they switch to the other room thanks to the image they have shared with the person. Then they can reuse the view to see what the other are doing in the remote location. And they can come back with the guitar and play guitar, I think, and record that. They can review it. So I stop here for awareness and communication. And the last part of the class is talking about collaborative interaction, and especially we will talk about navigation and co-manipulation. So what you can. So now you are in a virtual, in a collaborative virtual environment. You are aware of the other person. And now you want to do stuff with the other person, and we'll see that there are several things that you can do. So collaborative navigation means that you want to travel in the virtual environment. So usually, when we talk about collaborative virtual environment, it's in a mode what we call what you see is not what I see. So each user has his own point of view of the virtual environment. Maybe you will heard from Michel the WYSIWYG. The classical WYSIWYG is what you see is what I see. And it's what you have, for example, in Google Doc. A user sees the same things as the other, usually. But in a collaborative virtual environment, it's quite different because each one has his own point of view, and you don't see exactly the same thing, which is good because each one can have his own exploration of the virtual environment. But in some cases, it's also an issue because you don't see the same thing, and it's hard to communicate in that case. So it's good because each user can have its own point of view, but still sometimes user needs some time to share the same point of view. If I want to show you something, I need to see the same things on you. They need also to meet somewhere in the virtual environment. We saw that if you it's a very large virtual environment, sometimes it's hard to find the other. You also sometimes need to guide the other in the virtual environment. You will see an example, for example, during a fire, when you need to get out of a building when there is a fire, sometimes people can guide you, mainly during training, for example. And you also need some time to follow the other or this kind of thing. So there is basically usually three main modes of collaborative navigation. So the first one is you share the exact same point of view. You can say at some point we synchronize our view. We will have the exact same view. So in that case, you usually have one user that will drive, so that will control the navigation, and the other will only follow. So they will have the exact same view, but they are not allowed to move freely. They just have to follow one user, which could be a bit annoying in some case, especially if you are wearing HMDs. Even if you follow, you can still look in different directions. So it's a bit an issue. Of course, we can force you to look at the same image than the one, but then you can get sick because if you have the exact same head motion that another user, it's very hard for you to have the head moving, you have the view moving non-consistently with your head motion. It's very complicated. So usually we try to avoid that because this is something that can make the people sick in a few seconds. So if you wear HMD, you are still allowed to look in different direction, which is close actually to the second case. So the second case is one user move, and the other can follow with what we call an offset. So an offset is either a small difference in position, or it could be a difference in orientation. So for example, one user can lead the main navigation of the groups. But the others are still free to look at different in different direction or this kind of thing. And the third thing to allow collaborative navigation, we saw some example already where you can use a word in miniature. So we saw it to move the others through the word in miniature, but it also, we will see an example where you can also guide the other through the word in miniature. So you use a word in miniature to guide the other by showing them some highlight to guide them. So I will talk about this one, which is an example in the context of scientific data. So you have a massive amount of data to explore, and you need to find some very specific information in the data. So in that case, the user can save interesting point of view. So they can put this kind of, when they see something that is very interesting, this is a small representation of a camera, I think. So they let this small representation of the camera in the virtual environment as a kind of annotation to see here there is a very interesting point of view. And one particular user will select this camera. It will be moved at the exact same position as the, when the user records the point of view. So he will get the exact same viewpoint. And in this way, it's a way to share the same point of view. And also, I think they have implemented a way to move from one viewpoint to another. So if a user has analyzed the data and let several point of view on the data, so several view angle, for example, of an interesting phenomena, you will be able to travel between all these point of view with the next and preview. You have just two buttons, next and preview. And you will get move to the interesting point of view one by one. So it's a way here to share the point of view. Another example is this one about group navigation. So here the user are at the beginning of the, are part of a predefined group. And so of course, at the beginning, each user can travel independently. So they can navigate freely in the virtual environment. But the system implements here some functionality to help to travel with the group. So you have some functionality to follow the first member of the group. So that in a way, when you, it's a bit what happens when you walk in a group in the street and you follow one guy that knows the path. And here you can do the same in virtual reality, but automatically you say follow, and you don't have to do anything. Your point of view will follow one particular person. And you have also some functionality to come back at the middle of the group. So this is easy. So you say, I want to come back at the middle of the group. And you can be teleported at the middle of the group. And that could be efficient, because if everybody teleports at the same time at the middle of the group, it's a way to meet all together in the virtual environment. I want to show you also some examples about collaborative navigation with teleportation, because when we think about teleportation, it could be very annoying for navigating together. Because if you are two users, we'll see example here in the virtual environment, and one is teleport, you don't know where he is teleporting, and he just disappears, and you don't know how to follow him in case you want to follow him. So here they have implemented some nice way to do that. So this is the example of, the first one is to move the user. So here you want to move the user. You want to tell him to go somewhere with him, and it's very hard to explain him how to go. So here he has a way to tell him, in fact he will grab the user and move a shadow of the user somewhere else. But the user still stay at the same position. He can still interact. And he just received a notification saying someone wants to move you. And if he accepts, he is teleported to where the other has moved you. And the second one is this issue about teleportation. If this guy teleports somewhere, I don't know where he went. So in that case, they have proposed to also use a shadow. So this guy is teleported. Oh, go fast maybe a bit. So this guy teleports, but I don't know, it's very hard to see, but a shadow stay here to say this guy has teleported to a new location, and if you want to join it, you can click on the shadow, and you will be teleported also close to the guy that just left. Up, and you join him here, so you he click again, and then he joins the person on the other location. So they try like that to fix this issue about collaborative navigation. I don't. Yes, the other one is another way to move the other person. But like here in this application, they are building a city together, and they want to agree on something. And sometimes it's very convenient to be able to grab the other close to you and showing him some stuff. The last, I think, this is one of the last thing about collaborative navigation is this guy has proposed some technique for guidance. So the idea is you have one user that is moving inside the virtual environment, and the other one wants to guide him through a world in miniature. So it was done in the context of exploration of a building. So one user is using a cave system and has to find some target in the building. And the other one has to drive him inside the building through a world in miniature. And they are not allowed to talk, I think, in this example. So I think they have proposed several several solutions. So the first one is this kind of arrows that indicate the direction where you have to go. And the one that use the world in miniature can change the position of the arrows to guide you in the virtual environment. So this is the view of the guy that views the world in miniature. So he see an avatar. Oops, here it's a bit weird, but he see an avatar of the person, and he'll see also the field of view of the person, which is this thing, to understand what the person is looking at. Yeah, they can change the level of detail. That was interesting. And they have implemented three ways to guide the person. So the first one is just to draw arrows, like you see the blue arrows in the virtual environment, to guide the person. So in that way, this one just has to follow the arrows in the virtual environment. Second solution is to highlight the path by the user here is manipulating a small small light that will put some light in the virtual environment, and the other user just have to follow the path by checking at the light. So he sees some light on the virtual environment and he can follow the light to find his path. And the last one here is where they manipulate this small arrow I talked about at the beginning. That is like a compass that indicates the direction to follow. And they have run some experiments to compare these three techniques. I have to admit, I don't remember exactly what are the results of the technique, but here it just has to follow the arrows here. So I don't remember exactly which one was the best solution, but I think just to show you that some people explore some solution to guide a user in virtual reality. The two last thing about about navigation is the thing about collocated navigation. I think I will not detail everything in detail, but as I explained you at the beginning, when you are several users in the same settings, you can have issue as soon as you want to navigate. So for example, here they want to cross this door, but only this guy can cross the door and the other cannot. So they have to move together to cross the door, which is an issue. I think they have implemented several techniques to help them navigating, even if they are not close together. So the first option is yet to block, and it is what happened. They have to move to go together. It's what's happened here. So this is the view of the red person that you saw on the previous part of the video. The second option is to let them cross the wall, but that's not very good because then user will get very distracted by the wall. So they have implemented a second option that move the person close to him each time there is a collision between the person and the wall. I don't want to go too much into detail, but just to say that there is some issue as soon as you are many users in the same virtual room. And there is a last one, but yeah, I don't go too much into detail. just to finish on navigation, you have also some issue when you have several users in a cave system. So you can have a collision. You can bump into each other if you are looking at different view in the virtual environment. And you can also have occlusion, because one user can show up in front of you and block the thing you see on the screen. So they have some people have done some work to avoid this collision and work to force you to look at different direction. And like you force this user to look, use this part of the cave, and you force this user to use this other part of the cave. And you have another issue that is consistency and inconsistency. You can have several, you can have two options, so two solutions, two situations, sorry. You can have two situations. So the first situation is, so of course the two people are in, so this is the real world. So you have the two people inside the cave system here, and you can be in the consistent situation where the two people are at the exact same location in the virtual environment. So in that case, that's good, because the avatar of the person are at the exact same position than the user, and everything is consistent. But you can be also in an inconsistent state where the two users as navigate in different location of the virtual environment. So in that case, still the two people are inside the same real room, but instead they have moved in different location of the virtual environment. In that case, they are not exactly looking at the same part of the virtual environment. And in that case, you have an issue because you see the user A in the room, but it's not the proper location of his avatar in the virtual environment. So these people have done also some work to try to avoid these things. I will show you the video. It may be help to understand. So you have these two guys that are looking at, so we see the two view of the two guys here. So we see, I think at the beginning it was consistent. They were seeing the same thing. They see each other here in the virtual environment. And then I think they travel to grab some object. So then they have very different view, even if they are in the same environment. So they go to grab object and come back. And so it's interesting because they can have navigate freely, grab object, and come back to achieve co-manipulation in the consistent situation. So they need to have a way between to switch between a consistent and inconsistent situation, even if they are in the same room. So I don't want to go too much into detail of that. So by the way, this is some work done by the virtual reality team of LIMC. So you visit the cave at LIMC, and this is done by the virtual reality team at LIMC. So the last part is about co-manipulation. So co-manipulation is now several users want to manipulate together a same object. So they want to edit a virtual object together. For example, they want to move it or they want to scale it. For example, in the we see the scenario where two people are building a city. Maybe they will want to edit an object together. They also sometimes want to achieve a hard manipulation task in virtual reality. So we saw, for example, in the case of the data exploration between the two people in France and in UK, they wanted to position a cutting plane. And this was a very hard task to achieve a fine position of the cutting plane. So they were doing it together. Or they also want maybe sometime to mimic the same task in the real world. We see the example of the two people manipulating the front glass of the car. And this is because in the real world, the two workers in the assembly line has to manipulate together the front glass and put it on the car. So we want to train them maybe, or to check if it's not too hard to do in virtual reality. So this is the scenario where you need co-manipulation. Then in that case, you will need to manipulate the degree, what we call degree of freedom of the object. So usually we have 6 degrees of freedom. So there is 3 translation. So the translation, you know, it's above, forward, backward, left, right, and up, down. And the 3 rotation also around the 3 axis. plus you can sometimes add an additional one that is the scale of the object, that you can change the scale, and also some other parameters. Sometimes you want to manipulate the color or the shape of the object. So it means that you have a lot of parameters to manipulate. And you have usually three solutions to allow co-manipulation. And the main issue is to avoid conflict. Because if two users are manipulating an object, they can do concurrent action on the object, and you have to manage that. So the three solutions to do, the first one is, we will see an example, is to work on different copies of the object, and then they need to decide which one they want to keep. You can also let them manipulate different degrees of freedom, which is a way to achieve co-manipulation and to solve conflict. So for example, one guy can manage the translation of the object, and another guy can manage the rotation of the object. So this is a way to do. And sometimes you also want to let them manipulate the same degree of freedom of the object. And in that case, you have some issue. You need to manage conflicts that can occur if they do different action on the object. So we'll see example of these three things. So if you want to, this one is manipulate copies. So this two guy want to create to position the building of this this city, and they want each one want to try his own configuration. So this guy grabs the object, and this guy also grabs the object. So that's why in that case they create copies, and each one can manipulate his own copy. So the blue, this guy is manipulating this copy, and this guy is manipulating this copy. And then they can do whatever they want. And at the end, of course, they will have an issue. They will have to choose which copy they want to keep. I think we see that at the end of the video. So each one creates his own copy of the object and manipulates it. So yeah, here we'll see. So this guy is manipulating this copy. This one is manipulating the other copy. And you can even, at some point, create another version of the object. So you have here three versions of the object. And then they can either see the three versions one by one. And then at the end, they need to decide which one they want to keep. So here they see the three versions. And I'm sure to remember, but they will probably select one that they like. Yeah, they decide to keep this one, and they do like that. So this is one option to manage concurrent manipulation. The second one, as I say, is to manipulate different degree of freedom. So here, the user can use the same tool. So for example, these people propose to use two virtual arrays. So you have two users, and they can manipulate objects with a virtual array. So one can grab it with the virtual array, and the other can move it, and they have to move it together with the virtual array. Or they can use different interaction tools. So for example, you can use a virtual array on a virtual hand. So one user can pick object with the virtual array to manage position of the object, and the other one can grab the object with his hand and manipulate rotation of the object. And these people have shown with user 2D that it's usually faster, easier, and more precise to achieve the task with two users than to achieve with a single user manipulation. And the last case is when you want to manipulate the same degree of freedom. So in that case, it's an issue because they will manipulate together, for example, position and orientation of the object. And you need to find a way to solve the conflict between the two actions. So one solution is just to do like the basic solution that we think about is do the mean of each user action. But this is not very good solution because it can create very weird behavior. So for example, if I have an object, I'm pulling it in this side, and the other one is pulling it in the other side, the object will just don't move. And you're pulling, and you don't understand why the object doesn't move. It's because the other one is pulling it on the other side. So this is not very good. So some people have tried to use some more sophisticated solution. So one solution is to use a force, so use a physical engine that will compute the position of the orientation of the object according to some force that the user will apply on the object. And in that case, because it could be the same issue. If two people are pulling an object on both sides, you have also the same issue. And in that case, they put some spring between the user end and between the object. Then you can get a quite stable position of the object, even if sometimes it's not realistic, because I will pull it, and I don't understand also why it doesn't move. But it's just because the other one is pulling it on the other side. Another solution is it's what we use in some case for co-manipulation of, for example, the front glass of the car, is you use a manipulation with three contact points. So here they have what they call 3N manipulation, where one user manipulate two contact points and the other user manipulate one contact point. And the three contact points, we define a plane that allow to manipulate the object in the three degree of freedom for translation and 3 degree of freedom for translation. And we will see an example, a video of that later. And the last thing, in case of when you manipulate the same degree of freedom, it's very important to provide a feedback about the other user action, because you need really to understand what the other is doing. And in that case, there is several ways to do that. So one case is to use force feedback. So you will feel the force of the other, as we talked before. And you can understand that he is pulling in the different direction than you. But you can also use virtual feedback. So for example, this guy proposed to use some curve ray. So if you are using two virtual ray to manipulate an object, the shape of the ray will change according to the user action. So maybe we can see it more clearly here. So we have two users here. The red one is moving the object on the left. The blue one is moving the object on the right. And then the ray is curving here to show that they are both pulling in different directions. The idea is just to give them a feedback here to understand what they are doing. And here we have a kind of similar idea with a kind of rubber band, that stretch between the user hand and the object to show that also you are applying force on the object. So I will show you an example here. It's a co-located co-manipulation. So the two users are here manipulating an object. I think it's here, it's with four contact points, but it's quite similar to the three contact points I talked about before. And they are using what we call a props. So it's a tangible interface that mimics the shape of the object and to feel the object and also to feel the force of the partner. So you will see. Oh no, this one is with three contact points. So I think they have both options. So you see they are trained to do some manipulation. I don't remember, it's a part of a car also. I don't know which one. But, yeah, and they try different solutions and explore it. But the main interesting thing is see that with three contact points, they can manipulate the object. and also the use of the tangible interaction with these props is interesting also, because it makes you possible to feel the force of the object. But this one, we talked about it also before. These two guys are also using a props to have the haptic feedback. And they have shown in experiment. So I was talking about it at the beginning, because here they did an experiment with the haptic props and without the haptic props. And they show that it's much more efficient to achieve the task with the haptic props than without. So to conclude this class, so we saw that we have two modes of collaboration. It's co-located and remote collaboration. But we also saw that the limit between the two is not very clear, and it's more a continuum for social presence. So you can be remote, but have a very good representation of the other and feel a good social presence. And you can be in the same room, but not see the other one, not hear it, and not feel it. So it's like if you are very far away. So it's not that clear. We saw that there is several solutions to represent a user in the collaborative virtual environment. It could go from very realistic to very simplified solution. And there is no sometimes good and bad solution. So each one could have an advantage according to the application. And that it's also interesting to show both the activity and the capability of the user to help the other to understand what they do and what they can do. We saw that a voice is usually used for communication, but we need also more tools to improve the communication between users. And we saw that there is a wide range on collaborative interaction. So you can navigate together or help the other to navigate. You can move together virtual objects. And of course, all this collaborative interaction will be interesting according to the application that is targeted according to the scenario. At the end, we saw also that feedback of users are very important, especially for manipulation. It's very important to understand what the others are doing if you want to move an object together, for example. And we saw at the beginning that there is a lot of application of collaborative virtual environment. So it could be co-expertise of scientific data, collaborative review of design in industrial project, training also, so to learn a collaborative task, to learn with a remote teacher, and also to learn with additional content. So for example, in some teaching environment, you can use augmented reality to add additional content to help the user to learn some stuff. It could be also very interesting in entertainment. So you have more and more collaborative video game. You could have artistic performance with remote people that meet in a virtual environment to dance a ballet, for example, or this kind of thing. I saw some stuff about concert, also some remote people meet together in a virtual environment to play a concert. And the last thing is also social presence. So you can meet in collaborative virtual environment to talk or play with friends and so on. So I stop here for today. I think we are on time.